The Dirty Dozen, Ireland's motorsport legends in conversation with John Kenny. This week, Jeremy McWilliams.
This was the moment Jeremy had been waiting for, his first Grand Prix triumph, and the Ulsterman certainly hopes it won't be his last.
It's nice to win. It's I didn't know what it was going to feel like, but it still feels the same whether you get on the third position, second position. It's a little nicer, and now I can say I won a Grand Prix and hopefully win another. But it's been a long time coming, yeah. I think it's only been the last 2 years, though, that I've had machinery that's possible to get it onto to the podium and maybe win a race. So I got to thank Aprilia for that. They've worked very hard, and they've kept me and their team. And this circuit suits the bike. Made a bit of a gamble on the start line, went for intermediates. At the end of the race, they were really moving about quite a bit, but it was the right decision, and I'm really pleased.
Jeremy McWilliams, the only Irish motorbike racer to win a MotoGP round, the 250cc race at the Dutch Grand Prix at Assen in 2001. He raced in the 500cc and MotoGP classes as well, consistently picking up championship points and pole positions, mostly on privately entered machines, beating the works riders on many occasions. McWilliams hails from Belfast, and like Dubliner Eddie Leacock, rode the Miller Transport 500cc machine in the World Championship. He also drove for Aprilia, a semi-works outfit, and regularly outdrove his more illustrious opponents who were entered on factory-backed bikes. He's the second of our bike legends to be featured on the series after Robert Dunlop. And I met up with Jeremy McWilliams at his trailer at the British Superbike Round at Mondello Park as his crew, as you'll hear, prepared his evening meal after practice. McWilliams began by speaking about his Belfast background.
I've met so many people all around the world. They've all expected me to come from Belfast. They come from a bit of a strange upbringing with, you know, bombings and shootings. Unfortunately, that's the first thing that people think of whenever you say you've been brought up in Belfast. I fortunately didn't see any of that. I had a great happy childhood. I was born in Belfast, and then most of my childhood I didn't see anything of that nature. But normal happy childhood. Mum and Dad were together. They only split up probably about 10 years ago, and my brother went to school with my brother in a place called Ballyclare, which is another 6 miles further out of that, and we had a great time, really.
What were your pursuits? What were your hobbies? What were you doing?
Normal things, you know, dreaming about riding motocross bikes, I think, like most kids at that age, whenever you're in your early teens, and probably didn't really get to ride a bike properly until I was about 14 or 15. Something my parents didn't prefer me to have at the time, and it wasn't until many years later I started persuading them and coaxing them that I got a motocrosser and just played about with it. No competition. I wasn't pushed into any sort of competition. I certainly wasn't something that I don't think my father would have even allowed if I'd wanted to go and race motocross, so we just did it for a bit of fun.
And was there any other background to that? I mean, how would you persuade it to get into, say, motocross at the age of 14?
Most kids, you go through phases. You know, I played a little bit of football at school. Didn't really do much else. Motorsport wasn't really in my family. My father was a horsey man. Liked to go to the point of points. Got dragged along to the point of points against my wishes many times. My brother ended up being a jockey. Probably against his wishes, but he ended up as a professional jockey, and still is working right here, right beside us, where we are in Nace at the moment. Pat McWilliams. So I have no idea why I got into motorsport or how, but it was something that kids in my class, two or three of them, were lucky enough to have motocrossers, and they went racing at the weekend. Of course, they talk about it quite often. I was pretty envious of that, and I think probably that's why I've raced and raced for so long, because I didn't really get to ride motorbikes competitively until I was in my 20s, you know, mid-20s. So for a bit of crack, we used to go, when I was 17, we used to go up to the local circuit in County Antrim and get in there on a Sunday and race around it. And I think I just found out by accident that I could ride a bike all right.
And when did you persuade yourself to become serious at it?
I think you get into it and you do it as a bit of fun. You get into a race circuit, so we're cooking the chicken. This is all part of it, isn't it? It's like your rally drivers and, you know, Formula One drivers and stuff. You know, they didn't intend to be what they are. A lot of those guys started on carts. I just happened to start on two wheels. And now I'm making a living at it. But I've really got no idea what the difference is between somebody who's very good at in this, and the next person who can make a their profession. I'm not really sure what the cutoff is there, and I still can't work that out.
But the amazing thing about it is, like, you were 24 when you won the Irish production class in the 350. I mean, that is very, very late to be starting a professional career in terms of, you know, coming through the ranks. I mean, as you mentioned, motor race drivers, four wheels, starting karts, but they're starting 6, 7 years of age. You're doing it at 24.
That's true. And most of the guys that are in this paddock, a lot of them would have been persuaded to race motocross from an early age and progress through the ranks until they get into tarmac. I didn't actually start racing, if you think 24 is it, I didn't start racing professionally until I was 29. Because I raced for a bit of fun for a couple of years over here, won the Irish Championship in the first year of trying, then got a 250 ride and ended up winning the Irish Championship with QUB, Queen's University in Belfast, and Robert Fleck. And that's something that, you know, that I thought that's as far as my career would have gone at that time, or would probably ever go. You know, then the next stage, you know, what is the next stage when you win an Irish Championship? You've got to go and win a British Championship. I went over and competed in England, and to be quite honest, didn't win a British Championship. I won a couple of races at British Super Cup on 250s, and I got a ride on a 750 for part of the season, and I ended up on the podium a couple of times. But at that stage, the rest of my career would have only been a dream, you know, because I didn't get into it then until the year after, which is 1993, when Joe Miller, who had been watching all my local events, even though he had a Grand Prix team at the time with Eddie Lycock, he'd been coming home and watching all the local stuff and maybe some of the British stuff, and he offered me a ride in GP. And you know, I was so green, I really didn't know what that entailed, you know, giving up your 9-to-5 and walking away from it. You know, I just asked him to match my wages, which I thought was very kind of him to do so. Walk into a professional career at 29 years of age on a 500cc two-stroke Yamaha, something I'd never even ridden before. So it was a big, big jump. At the time, I didn't realise how big a jump it was. I'd never experienced anything like it, and it took me probably 6 events even to finish a race.
Tell us about this guy, Joe Miller. As you mentioned, he did also the Miller Transport bike. He also backed Eddie Lacock, who went on to do the 500cc Grand Prix Championship, like yourself as well. Who was he? What was his background? And why was he so involved with Irish bike riders?
Joe was just a total enthusiast. Still is. Still goes to all the GP races in his camper, his motorhome. Even though he hasn't a team, still goes and watches all of the races with a friend of his. He was a very successful businessman. His transport company was one of the biggest in Northern Ireland, and he sold it out. And when it was running, he gave me a job as the number one rider. Unfortunately, Eddie Lacock then had no job. He was only running a one-man team. So I took Eddie's ride. And, you know, to this day, if it hadn't been for Joe Miller, I wouldn't have been there. I don't think anybody else would have picked me up to do that. There was no other, even British teams, never mind Irish teams. After I was there, there was a couple of teams came in, Harris Yamaha and Paget Yamaha. And they both ended up there in the same year with other riders, obviously. John Reynolds was one of the riders, Sean Emmett was one of the riders. And they only managed to survive a year or two at GP before not being very successful and leaving it. I hung on and hung on because basically it was my career, and I wanted to make a go of it. And turns out I had a really good year in 94. I finished 12th in the World Championships and second privateer. Still annoyed at, you know, not winning the Privateers Championship, but I was second privateer, and that's how my career went on.
So when it got serious for you then, as you mentioned, at the age of 29, was 1993, your first Grand Prix race, the 500cc World Championship in Phillip Island in Australia. What was the feeling like then when you were actually sitting on the bike on the grid for your first Grand Prix?
Anybody that says anything other than petrified, you know, would be lying. I think that was I didn't even know what I was doing in Australia when I got there, and the reality of it started hitting home. When you go out in your first practice session, and then your qualifying session, and you know, you realise that you're 20th or 21st in the grid, and not much sign of moving up. The reality of GP racing is certainly very stark.
Who are you up against those days? Who's the top people around there in 93, 94?
Well, just when the start of Mick Doohan's long run of World Championship titles. Wayne Rennie, I was fortunate enough to race against Wayne Rennie, and Wayne Rennie was trying to win a title in 93 whenever he had an unfortunate accident, and which ended his career. He's now wheelchair bound, but that, you know, there's other riders, great riders at the time. It was great, you know, it's fantastic to be able to say I rode against him. Kevin Swantz, you know, Alex Barras was racing there when I was there. Caparossi was there when I was there, still there. You know, that's quite strange to see them, you know, those riders still there. You know, I've left it now, and those riders are still, they were there before I got there, and they're there after I've left. You know, I don't think any of them really compared to Valentino. I think Valentino's on a roll now, and I don't think I've seen a devastating rider such as him, you know, in all the time I was there.
You stayed in the 500cc series until 1996. Best finish was 12th in the 94 series for Yamaha, and then you changed to the 250cc class. What's the reason behind that?
Because we couldn't be competitive at 500, I think, was the main reason. We tried everything because basically there was a lot of money spent really to go nowhere in 96. So in 97 we had to have a rethink. And we looked at the 250 kit bikes, 250 kit Hondas, and a decision was made to buy them because they looked like we'd get closer to the front. I mean, the gap in terms of lap times was smaller in 250. But we did that, and it was the best move I think I ever made, was go back on a 250 and become competitive in a couple of years on that bike with mechanics who really were also learning, like I was learning the 250. We didn't have very much in the way of experience, but there was an awful lot of effort. Probably, you know, I think one of the best teams I rode for in my career.
The big moment in your career, Grand Prix 250 MotoGP, is your one and only win, the Dutch TT at Assen. Obviously a very big moment for you. Can you remember that day and what it really meant to you?
It's a distant memory. I think it's one of those things that, you know, it's happened and you wish it happened more often. You know, there were other times that I probably had as much elation, you know, from the pole positions and stuff as that win was. Of course, winning a Grand Prix is fantastic, but sometimes when I got on the podium, they were so hard-fought races that just to get on the podium was as good as winning the race. And that happened in Donington in the wet weather in 2000 when, you know, the tyres started breaking up. Valentino had his first win. Kenny Roberts, who was the existing world champion, finished second, and pipped me, you know, for second place, which I was a bit disappointed about. But just getting on the podium was good because there was so many times that, you know, I was nearly on my arse. But that race win isn't really any more than the other good memories. They've all got good memories for other reasons. And I think the biggest difference was just after the race, how much the media want to speak to you. And that was the one thing that I'm not that good at. And I went away, turned my phone off for a couple of days, and actually went to Bournemouth of all places and stayed down there with my wife and kids on the beach and just drove home at our leisure because we actually drove to Assen. It's funny that on the way to Assen, funny story that I'd driven at the Audi Palmer School about 3 weeks previous with Jonathan Palmer, who, as you know, is now very well connected in British motorcycle racing. And at the time, he just ran the Palmer Championship. I went over and raced Andrew Nesbitt, who was the existing tarmac champion at the time. He invited us over. We had a race against each other in single-seaters. And I beat Andrew by about 2 or 3 seconds a lap, much to my surprise and his. And I was driving down to Assen, wife and kids in the car, on the way to my first victory. Palmer phoned up and said, "Would you please come over and race in Mandela Park in the Palmer Championship on the same day that I'll be racing in Assen?" And I had to turn him, unfortunately, I had to turn him down.
It stuck in my mind because I remember watching that race on Eurosport. It was the dampest kind of day in Assen. I mean, it usually is, actually, around the Dutch TT time. But it's a very unique race, and the fact that it's raced on a Saturday as well, all the other Grand Prix are on a Sunday, and it's a hugely attended race, and it really is. It brings out the passionate fans of bike racing.
Well, we used to go to Assen even before I started GP racing, and it was always one of my favourite circuits. It's probably one of the most difficult circuits you ever ride or drive, I'm sure. There's so much to it, and you never really seem to get a break anywhere. There's not really a straight. The straights have kinks in them, and they're flat-out kinks, unfortunately. But, yeah, Assen is one of those places you look up and you see a cloud coming over, you know it's going to rain. It's also the sort of place where you know if it's going to rain, for whatever sort of weather they have, it normally rains in half the circuit. So only half the circuit ends up really wet and half it ends up drying. So unless it's absolutely raining cats and dogs, you don't put wets on. You put anything else but wets, and that's exactly what I did. I just looked at it and thought, I know that half the circuit's over on the far side is going to dry quickly. But Anassen was one of those places where I just got it right. It wasn't smart thinking, it was just luck, to be honest. And no, you know, when I went up onto the front row, because I started from front row and I looked left, I could see all the wet tires, everybody wet tires, and I thought, this is easy. Because we'd just done the siding lap. So on the siding lap, I realised, well, there's a dry line coming already. I looked behind, and there's a couple of other riders, like Al Zamora, on a slick, and I thought, well, he may struggle for a lap or two, but he could be a danger man. And other guys on cut slicks, like as I was. So from the off, Melandry led it, and I went past Melandry and got away in the first lap. And the whole time, people still ask me to this day, why did you keep making such a big gap? Why did you want 16 seconds? Why do you want to win by 16 seconds? Because I knew that there was other riders on slicks out there. So I kept my head down. And funnily enough, Al Zamora did close down. And he would have closed a lot further had I not kept my head down. You know, he would have beaten me to the line. He was doing much faster lap times in the last couple of laps than I was. But yeah, good fun, good memory.
So you have that sensation behind you of being now a Grand Prix winner in the 250cc race in that Dutch TT at Assen. Sixth overall that year, it wasn't a bad year, but 2002 then, the MotoGP series came a call, and this new series to replace basically the 500cc class. I know the 250s are still there, and also the 125s. An easy decision, you went with the KR Proton team.
Well, it was a really easy decision. Team Norwich are, I still think, to this day, the best team I ever rode for. That may sound weird, but in terms of their efficiency as a team, it was incredible. They were Tom O'Kane, a well-known name from here now, was my chief mechanic. And unbeknownst to me, they tried to get me the year before. I'd signed a ride in 2001 with a very unknown Italian team on an Aprilia, because Aprilia had decided not to run the V-twin 500cc bag again in the premier class. And I was really disappointed about that, and I think that's why they signed me up. Whenever my 250 deal fell through with a guy, a waster, who decided that he may come along and run a team with no money whatsoever, lots of lies, lots of promises, it fell through. Aprilia put me on the 250. It wasn't until 2002 that I realised that I could have signed for Team Roberts in 2001. If I could turn the clock back, that's the only difference I would have made in my whole racing career, I think, because I think we could have won races in the Premier class in 2001 and not just one race on a 250.
The 500cc was the top end of motorcycle racing. The MotoGP series obviously is the bigger bikes. It's near 1,000cc, most of them. You know, are they still kind of trying to get the balance right on this MotoGP series? I mean, what's your overall feeling of that class?
We were all very sad to see the two-stroke thing going away. So when they decided to go four-stroke, you know, a lot of riders thought it was the end of it. And, you know, Valentino said something quite clever too. He said, you know, well, you know, four-strokes are quite easily ridden. Anybody can ride a four-stroke, but not very many people could ride two-strokes.
Your last season in the MotoGP series was the 2004, and you went back to Aprilia. Obviously, you were sad to leave the KR team.
Had the KR team had Michelin tires, I would have signed there and then. We wouldn't even have been speaking with Aprilia. You know, some people may not consider those two offers as being the greatest offers, but to stay in GP on semi-competitive machinery and do what other riders weren't capable of doing, to me, it was still a good offer.
The 2004 season is remarkable for the fact that Rossi had jumped off a Honda and gone to Yamaha, which wasn't a competitive machine up to that point. And lo and behold, he goes and wins the World Championship. Do you think that he is probably the best bike rider you've ever seen?
Without a doubt, I think anybody that's raced against them, and most people that even haven't raced against them, will say that. But it's funny, when you talk about riders, and you talk about riders from different eras, you know, they'll say, oh, Hillwood was the best. I've ridden in the Rennie era, and I always looked up to Rennie to more so than anybody else in motorcycle racing until Valentino.
That season then ended kind of acrimoniously for you, because there was talk that you were going to go back and stay with the MotoGP series for 2005, and the organisers apparently didn't want you to go back. And Shaky Byrne got the bike ride with Aprilia, and you were out in the cold. Is that fundamentally what happened?
That's a good one. I mean, we can talk about this all day. I could have gone down and started arguing with the organisers. What I didn't like and what I heard was that, you know, a TV company on mainland UK were pushing to have Shane because of their viewing figures. I then realised that I had to, you know, take a back seat, walk away from it, understand the politics of the sport, and go and do something else. And that's why I'm here in BSB with them. I'm quite happy to be here. This championship is as competitive as World Superbike Championship anyhow. And from my experience, when you go to somewhere like Oulton Park, Thruxton, or Malry, and you try to race the way you know how to race, it's virtually impossible because you're riding on circuits that aren't really up to the standard that lets you, you know, lets you use the bike the way you want to use it. You've got to set your bike up, Malry, for stop start. It's got to be absolutely pin sharp out of the turn. It's got to stop and turn. It's the same in Oulton Park, I believe, too. Then you go to a different circuit like Thruxton, and when you've never seen the circuit, it's bloody awesome. It's incredible, and it's just one of the hardest circuits ever to learn. It's all off camber, blind bends, flat out, fifth gear, sixth gear stuff into it, you know, and it's quite daunting.
Well, you're now in your mid-40s and, you know, had a long career behind you, even as you said earlier on in the interview that you started very late at the age of 29 being a professional bike rider. How long can you keep this going? I know you've got a 2-year deal with the BSB. Is that where you'll see it out, or is there plans perhaps to go back to MotoGP?
I don't think you can hop back in and out of GP. I'd be kidding myself if I thought I could go there and get back on a GP bike and be competitive again. I probably could right now, but you know, in a year's time or whatever, everything's moving on. When I was there, things were moving on ahead of me because I think the only thing that I can do for GP again is maybe help KTM set the bike up, because they seem to be having an enormous problem at the moment getting what I thought was a competitive bike when I tested it anywhere even half competitive again. And I don't know what's going wrong there. I have been invited to go back and do it, and I'll do that. I would enjoy that as much as racing, so I'll go back and see if I can help out there. And if something comes of it, you know, sure. Well, you know, you never know what's around the corner, but I can't really see myself signing for MotoGP as at 42 years of age. I can see myself here next year in BSB, you know, working in with a new team, racing at a different level completely, where you know things aren't like MotoGP. They're not perfect. You've got to sometimes just ride around on something that's not quite there, and sometimes they don't have time between sessions or even between one day to the next to make the change that I would like. So a lot of what I've learned in MotoGP is how to go out the window.
Do you think that BSB will perhaps be your last series and, you know, hang up the helmet after that?
I hope so, yeah. I can't do this forever, you know. I'm doing it for the love of it, but, you know, the body's starting to tell, and I've had a few problems this year. I had one injury that it's certainly been one of the most serious I've had in my career, and I've had some nerve damage in my shoulder. Unfortunately, there's nothing that they can do except, you know, wait. And if it doesn't get any better, you know, it could spell the end of my career too. So let's hope I get fit over this one and then look at the future. But I've always looked from day to day and never from year to year, never even really from week to week. As I get older, I'm probably starting to look from day to day to week, and maybe hopefully that'll get a couple of months doing something. But all my career was always, we'll see what turns up. You know, I've got kids and a wife and a mortgage, so I can't race forever and hope that it's going to pay the bills. I will have to do other things.
Yeah, a lot of other bike riders like Kenny Roberts, as we mentioned already, has moved into their own team management and running their own teams. Is that something you'd like to see yourself doing in the future, perhaps?
Be a lovely thought, but you know, there's plenty of great team managers out there that with lots of sponsorship, and to walk in and do something like that competitively, you need a lot of backing. I would like to start at the lower end of the scale and help out with the team first, see how it went. I've been very lucky. Let's hope, you know, that luck holds up and something else turns up in the future. Be even better if it's with two wheels and not back to a 9-to-5.
You never know, you might beat Andrew Nesbitt next time around in a rally. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Jeremy Williams.
Hope you enjoyed the pasta and the red wine. See ya.
Next week on Ireland's Motorsport Legends, Martin Donnelly.
What actually happened was that the belt cranks, they were bonded underneath the bottom of the tub. So when that neck broke off, all of a sudden the tub was on the tarmac. I was travelling at 165 miles an hour. You know steering control because the tub's on the ground. You know braking control because you're going straight on. If the carbon fibre then delaminated through shock I got thrown out of that. And I think, realistically, the thing's fair to say that if the tub hadn't have broke up, I would have been killed instantly, because your body only has a certain amount of elasticity.